EWTN Global Catholic Radio presents John of the Cross, The Great Exchange. Insights into the writings of St. John of the Cross, founder of the Discalced Carmelite Order. Now here is your host, Father Thomas Dubay.
Welcome once again to The Great Exchange and its faithful herald, St. John of the Cross. I am Father Thomas Dubay, Marist priest, stationed based in Washington, D.C. You may recall that last week we dealt with what is contemplation as John tackles a very difficult subject, so hard to explain, though it is so simple and beautiful in itself. It's beyond words, and that's why it's so hard to get over the ideas adequately. Now, we didn't finish with those gems. I gave you the gems, and what I mean is we have to add to those gem definitions, splendid as they are. We have to add another angle to this contemplative prayer that is also extremely important, and John, once again, does it so well. They are called, and some of you have heard of this, and some of you may know it quite well, they're called the two knights, knight of sense and knight of spirit. Those are the kind of official names for them. But they are really purifying contemplative prayer and indispensable for our growth in this deep prayer life and this profound experience of God of which we spoke earlier in our series. Now, what I want to do in dealing with this, and it can only be a sketch, actually. There is so much more that really could and should be said, but you can look that up on your own outside of the program time. I want first to say what these two knights, contemplative knights, what they mean, and first of all, though, what they have in common. These two types of prayer, and they are types of prayer, though when the person is in them and not aware of what's going on, the person can get very disturbed and think that prayer life is just about nil. What they have in common is that both of them are a dry desire for God, not the delight we've been talking about. That's advanced prayer. That comes further on in a deeply absorbing delight, ecstatic delight even. But this type of prayer, which is must come first before the other deep types, this type is dry, you feel empty, you want God, and people commonly, until they're instructed otherwise, they commonly presume their prayer is very bad indeed, almost non-existent. Now, the first sort of thing I want to say about these two knights, we're dealing what is true of both of them, then I'm going to take each one separately for a few special comments. What is common here in people's misunderstandings is they think that the knights of sense and spirit are sufferings of any kind, illness, contradictions from other human beings, failures, and perhaps the biggest mistake that is made even by professional people is they think that, for example, clinical depression, I've heard it called a dark night. It is not a dark night, at least not what John of the Cross is talking about, and he is the one that has made this terminology famous. I'm not positive if he originated it in the first place. That might go real back, about far back to Gregory of Nyssa in the 4th century, but at least John is certainly the one who has talked mostly about the two dark nights. And for John, it is not depression. A person who would confuse the two doesn't understand either what clinical depression is, or they don't understand the dark nights, to think that they are much the same thing. So they have, I repeat now, just to refresh our mind, the two nights have in common that they're a dry desire for God. Dry means you don't feel delight. You feel kind of empty and distracted too, at least very often in the first night. Now, the second trait that they have in common is that they are both caused by infused contemplation. They are contemplative prayer. And this is what many people do not understand. That's why they get so disturbed. If they knew that it was contemplative prayer of a very valuable type, well, they wouldn't be disturbed about it. And it is contemplation. And because of our defects, the light and the love that God is giving, He's always giving light and love in this infused prayer. But it comes over to this person as dark, dry, wanting, without the delight, The light might come once in a while a little bit, but for the most part at this stage, these two stages, it's very difficult kind of communing with God. Now the darkness comes not from the light and love God is giving, it comes from my defects. Because this type of prayer is very purifying, as I'll say a little further on, and it helps us to get rid of what's wrong with us. And so it comes over to us as difficult and dark because we are lacking. Third thing they have in common, both of them are very valuable. They are not only okay types of prayer, they're needed and indispensable, and no reason whatsoever to be upset by them. But if you're the usual person, I mean if you are a person living a serious meditative prayer life and you're growing into the beginnings of infused prayer and you hit this, and you will hit it soon, if you're living the gospel generously, you are almost sure to be upset. In spiritual direction, I find that everybody, I don't know if I've met an exception. There may be one, but I haven't met it, I'm afraid. Almost everyone is very upset. They think that their prayer is nothing because what comes over is that wanting of God, a deep desire for God, but you don't feel anything. The fourth thing they have in common is a terminology matter. And I want to change the classical terminology a little bit because I think now it can be easily misunderstood. These nights, the two of them, are called passive nights or passive purifications. Now, I don't care for the term passive anymore because today it means a kind of inertness, a bland nothingness kind of receptivity only. The word I prefer is the one I just used. It's a receptivity, and that's a better term because receptive means that we're receiving something, as indeed we are. Whereas passive today means like a bump on a log, doing nothing at all. And so I prefer not to call it passive nights or passive purifications. Now, that leads us to our next question. Why does this kind of prayer occur? There are very good reasons for it. And the first reason is that you and I cannot commune deeply with God. I've said this before, but it must be said again. We cannot have a deep communion with God in a serious prayer life that grows all the way to the summit unless we're purified of all of our defects. We cannot commune deeply with the All-Pure One until we're purified of all those little selfish clingings we talked about in three of our programs not too long ago, as you are sure to remember if you've been with us. They've got to be gone if we're going to have a deep prayer life. And these two nights of sense and spirit, two dark nights, help to get rid of what we can't get rid of. Now let me say a word about that. Despite our best efforts to live what we talked about in three programs of getting rid of our egocentrism, that's called active purification. We do all we can to be rid of our petty selfishnesses and the greater ones too, if we have any great selfishnesses. We work at it, and of course we must work at it all the time. But we cannot get rid of all of our defects by ourselves. I remember when I was just a youngster in the novitiate, this beginning, I was so surprised after 1.5 year of novitiate that I still had this defect or that one. I thought, boy, it won't take any time at all. I'll be next thing to perfect, you know. Well, it didn't work that way. We all have defects, and John of the Cross makes this very clear that despite our best efforts, we cannot be rid of, especially the deep roots. Now, the two nights are God purifying us through this infused light and love that is in contemplative prayer, not visions, not revelations, remember. He's purifying us so that we are less impatient and we grow in a gentleness toward others and we grow in honesty. We grow in a genuine use of created goods, the virtue of temperance. We grow in all the virtues, chastity and honesty and all the rest of them. And as we receive this infused light and love that seems so dark and difficult and dry and empty feeling, we're getting better and better and better. And that is true of both of the nights. If we do our part, God will do His. Now, That brings us then to our individual comments about each night. And this will have to be very brief so that we can get on with our final area, final that is in the main areas. Then I have, I think, several gems of John in another sense that we will finish up with down the road next couple of weeks. I want to say a few things now about the night of sense. Purification of our being on the sense level. That's why it's called night of sense. And the first thing to be said about it, is that it is very common. It comes when a person has been meditating discursively. We said a little bit about that. And after a while, the meditation doesn't seem to be working too well anymore. It's achieved its purpose. And God then begins to give this dark, dry desire for himself, the first night. It's the beginnings of infused prayer. And it is very common. As a matter of fact, I think it's universal. I don't think in spiritual direction I have ever met a person who has not gone into this rather soon, and the soon does not mean chronology in years, most of all. There is that dimension to it, but mostly it's soon in the sense of living the gospel generously. As soon as you and I really live what we've been talking about in the series from the beginning, living the gospel fully, and John really emphasizes that necessarily, the better we live the gospel in all the nitty-gritties of daily life, the sooner we're going to get to this purification stage in which God is going to make us better, together with our continuing efforts. So it's common to everyone that I know of that lives the gospel generously, that is engaged in a serious meditative prayer life, they grow into this, and they grow into it quite soon. I have even met teenagers who have this type of infused prayer. It's not chronology, first of all. It's how well they live the gospel. Indeed, I think teenagers can easily have quite advanced infused prayer beyond the first night of purification. Not chronology first. So you don't have to wait till your 25th anniversary to come to this stage of prayer. Now, I should like to give you the signs of being in this kind of prayer, the dark night of sense. We're talking about that at the moment. And I want to mention four signs. John indicates three, but they're very well done, of course. If John does it, it's going to be well done. But I'm going to put them in modern terminology, and I'm going to speak of four because it might help clarification a bit. The first sign is that the person cannot meditate successfully anymore. You know, reading, input, thinking it over, reasoning. We've talked about this, how that goes. It doesn't work anymore. Now, how long that takes before this begins to happen, it varies from person to person, and I cannot say. It might be a year or two, it might be 4 or 5 years, and one continues in meditation, that type of prayer, as long as it's working well, and one is benefiting from it. But the day will come where it doesn't work anymore. One would have to force himself to do this kind of thing at prayer time. That's the first sign, and it does not come from laziness or neglect, because we're talking now about generous people. Because if we're not generous, we're simply not talking about advancing in prayer life. The second sign is there, instead of the desire to meditate, the person has that longing for God. It can be more or less strong, but there is a longing for God. And it's punctuated with distractions. They come and go. God doesn't give the distractions, of course. We furnish them. But I'm not talking about deliberate willed distractions. But we're wounded enough that distractions come and go. And there's that dry wanting of God, and that's pretty much what goes on. And that dry desire and longing is not the result of a reasoned process and then making up your mind, I'm going to desire God. It doesn't work this way, for example. God is infinitely beautiful. I want him. Therefore, I should desire him. Therefore, Lord, I desire you. That would be discursive meditation. Thinking over thoughts and making your conclusion, coming to your conclusion in a human manner. The desire for God we're talking about is just there, which means it's infused. It's not a conclusion of the one praying. The third sign of this person at prayer is the inner empty experience, inner void. I don't want to exaggerate this because the second night is going to be much stronger sort of thing than this first night. But there is a feeling of emptiness, and this is what disturbs people so much. They know they want God, no doubt about that. They're trying to be generous in the nitty-gritty of everyday life, no doubt about that either. But they don't know what to make of this emptiness. We were made to be filled, as St. Paul told the Ephesians, and we've talked about that, and we'll come back to it again another time, to be filled with the utter fullness of God. So they've heard that, rightly. And that's what we're supposed to be. But now they feel so empty and they conclude something is really wrong. They're not actually empty, but they feel empty and are disturbed. That is a definite sign for a generous person of being at this stage. The last sign, the fourth one, is that this person is also aware that there's more to be given to God. The individual knows that he or she is trying to grow, making serious efforts, but is aware that there's a long way yet to go. And so there's what you might call an ill-defined concern about not giving God enough. I call it ill-defined because if you ask this person, well, what are you holding back then if you think you're not giving enough? They usually do not give you a specific answer. That is a definite, I'm doing this and I know I'm doing it and I really don't care. They wouldn't be at this stage of prayer if they were that mediocre. So it's ill-defined in the sense that they know they're not perfect, but they also know that there's more to give, but they're trying to give everything they see at this moment is to be given. Now, when all of these four signs are present at prayer time, that longing for God, the inability to meditate, the longing presence is there. It's a kind of presence of God. You're aware that it's there. And you didn't produce it, you see, and you're generous. When you have all these signs together, you are in this stage of purification. I call it sometimes the snag stage of prayer growth. Snag, not because there's something wrong with it. It's very good development, as I've said already. I say snag because actually it seems to be a snag to the person praying. For practical advice and guidance about what to do here, we can't cover it in this series. I would suggest you look at the two books that you find on the screen or will find on the screen, Fire Within, and also the other one, Seeking Spiritual Direction. They give lots of practical advice about this growing in prayer. Now, we say a few words about the night of spirit. And spirit here refers to intellect and will. See, the first level in our human person that needs to be rectified is our sense level. Now, the other level is the level of the spirit, that is, intellect and will, not material realities, as you know. I have a few things to say about this night, this purification, in addition to what we said is common to both nights. The first thing to notice is that by infused advanced prayer, which this is also infused prayer, and it's an advanced kind of infused prayer, the deepest roots of our faults are being stripped away, happily. Even after the first night of purification, there are still deep roots, and this person is not perfect yet. Those roots, the deep ones, have to be got rid of, and it's the second night in which that happens. They're being purified away. And so once again, I repeat, because it is so hard to believe these are good degrees and developments in prayer, I repeat, it is good and valuable even though this second night is more difficult by far than the first. And that leads us to our second comment. The second night of purification, the night of spirit, comes after one has grown considerably in advanced prayer, even deep absorptions in God, deeply delightful. And then this second night begins to happen. And it's usually kind of gradual, the happening. John calls them omens, where what you have in the second night are given at first, at least often with many people, as just a bit of a while, a day or two, maybe a week or two, but it's not the lasting thing that the full night is, an omen. In any event, these purifications in the second night are much more painful than those in the first night. And I'll just say a little word about what is so painful in the second. Namely, the person feels not only empty inside, but feels desolate, even feels abandoned by God. Now here you have somebody that is far advanced beyond the beginner in contemplative prayer, has been purified on that first level, has grown into a deep contemplative prayer life that is absorbing, delightful, almost ecstatic, you see. And now the person feels abandoned by God. It is understandable that this individual is very much upset. Even when a good spiritual director reassures this person that really everything is okay. As a matter of fact, you're in very good shape. As John put it to one who was disturbed, said, John said to this particular person, you've never had it so good because you're growing in humility, you're growing in patience, and you're growing in love. You see, this is very good development, but it seems a disaster to the person who's there. The person is not abandoned by God, of course not, but it feels that way. The second night is the final preparation before the transforming union, so that when a person has been purified entirely in the second night, that person will be in the transforming union, which is an ideal little bridge to our next main area. As a matter of fact, it's the last main area of our series. At the end, as I said, we'll have some other little items that are just beautiful thoughts from John of the Cross and extremely rich. But the transforming union, which we now take up, we'll begin it this week, and it's a nicely connected transition here, even though it occurs toward the end of this program. We enter now into the very summit of human life on earth. Everything we have said in our series thus far is aimed at this summit, perfection of beauty. It's our goal, and it's a normal development in the spiritual life, and that is what we take up here. What is this like? Now, a little bit of forewarning. What I say, not so much in the next couple of minutes, but certainly next week, is going to require some patient thinking. And the reason for the patient thinking is that this is all so sublime that it is most difficult to put it in words. This is why St. John of the Cross and St. Teresa too, but John especially, why they are so gifted and blessings to us. If we didn't have them, we just wouldn't have an explanation for it, at least not the full, rich explanation that they offer. But nonetheless, I want to say that it is going to be difficult for many people to understand, not difficult in the sense of abstract thinking, like the general relativity of Einstein is difficult to understand. That's a different kind of thing. But this is unspeakable. It's beyond words. And so, because also it is not common, it's not something that you can chat over with your neighbor, unless you've got an extraordinary neighbor. And that would be a marvelous gift if you did, or you do have. And I'm almost sure you've never heard an explanation of this before, unless you've read St. John of the Cross, or maybe listened to the series on St. Teresa, where we said a bit about this. We're going to say rather more about it in this series, because John adds quite a lot. And so, that little forewarning, I don't want to frighten anybody, I don't want to discourage anybody, but it will require some thinking and some introduction to John's use of metaphors. Because you use metaphors, poetic language, when you're beyond what ordinary prose can express. You're trying to express the inexpressible. Now, that being said, another problem we have here is a marvelous problem. Namely, I mentioned it when we took up the experience of God earlier in our series, that the difficulty here is that people will assume very readily that I must be exaggerating in what I'm saying. And John must be exaggerating too, because you really couldn't have that sort of thing on the face of the earth. Because nobody, I shouldn't say nobody, very few people have an experience of this or know about it. It's not talked about. You'll never find it on the evening news or in a paper. You just never will. And so it can strike people easily that this must be unreal because it is so uncommonly understood or even spoken about. And the difficulty is also that you will tend to think that I might be exaggerating and must be exaggerating some things, and we don't like exaggeration. We are so tired of advertising that exaggerates a product, and we're so tired of political speeches in which this great state of whatever it is, well, I don't know if it's that great or not, but inflated language, we get very tired of it, and the temptation will be to think that we must be using inflated language here. That's a little bit of the problem that we have to face. St. Paul also had this problem, of course, in that text we have cited a number of times already, that God wants us to be filled with the utter fullness of Himself. That sounds like a gross exaggeration, but it isn't. And so we finish on the happy note. Don't be discouraged. Don't be downcast. We will understand it as best we can. It is so sublime. God bless you. We'll take up next week.
Join us again next week at this time for John of the Cross, The Great Exchange, on EWTN, Global Catholic Radio.